Production is A1 over here.
Hey, look at that, dude. I'm fired up.
Dude, nobody told me we were going to have that much of a banger as our intro song. That's, that's incredible.
Yeah, they're taking care of us. All right, over here at Lions Collective. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi, joined by my left and right's all messed up. Justin Rogers, of course, Colton Pouncey, Will Birchfield. We got a crew here, and we're going to be talking Detroit Lions every single Wednesday at this time, 6 p.m. weekly, to talk about, well, right now, training camp preseason, and as the season kind of continues, we'll be recapping, previewing games as well. So this is our debut episode. If you're tuning in for the first time, hit the subscribe button before you do anything, like the stream, and share it. But fellas, how are we feeling tonight? Debut episode here at Lions Collective.
I'm blessed to be here, man. I'm fired up and ready to get this thing rolling. I don't know about you guys, but there's no place I'd rather be on every Wednesday from here on out at 6 o'clock and with you three talking ball.
I was fairly calm and then the music hit and I was like, okay, here we go. So yeah. I'm at a different level all of a sudden.
I imagine that's what it's like to hear a Dan Campbell speech after a game, just that intro music we just heard. So I'm fired up, man. I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
That's going to be the new Ford Field intro music for games this year. It's going to be the Lions Collective countdown.
Yeah, you think the intro music was good. We still got an outro. All right. So, I'm just saying. All right. After the hour show, wait for the outro. All right. Lots to get to today, obviously. You guys were at training camp today. So I was lucky to be in attendance. It was a nice day. And you guys have been there every single day. So there's plenty of things to get to regarding that. We also have a preseason game on Friday where the Lions will face the Falcons. And we'll see if the Lions can get in the end zone more than once. So there's things to look forward to, of course, on Friday. So we'll get to that later in the show. But to kind of start off, I do want to get your guys' thoughts. You guys are the perfect people to ask this as well. Kind of like a broad overview of camp, more on the positive side. Talk about surprises. We'll get into concerns as well. But just to start us off, and it doesn't really matter who goes first, we'll talk about some things that have surprised us in a positive way from so far, either from preseason or from training camp. You can go either one.
Hey, Justin, you kick it off. You have the most tenure among us.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, my biggest surprise was learning Jeff was at camp today and didn't bother to say hello.
Yeah,
we had to hear from Nolan. Ridiculous. Hey. We have not met face to face yet, so big, big blown opportunity by our host here.
That's a missed assignment, dude.
That's on me. Hey, that's on me. Tap the helmet. That's on me.
Look, the Hall of Fame game, I think, did not give an impression of what we've seen this camp, and there's so many different directions. You know, we could go with surprising positives, but I really want to start with the wide receivers and two in particular, and maybe the two most popular names in town. So sorry if I'm cutting the legs out from under one of you here, but Jameson Williams and Isaac Tesla. Jameson Williams is a different dude, and I've both had a hard time wrapping my head around it and explaining it to people. The transformation of this guy over the course of 2 years. 2 years ago, you know, his first full season, I was not convinced he was ever going to figure it out. It was like the worst case of yips I've ever seen with drop passes from a NFL caliber receiver. The routes were a mess. He looked like a very incomplete player. Yeah, there's a ton of raw talent there, but raw talent doesn't work in the NFL. You need precision. Last year was a big step forward, but still, you know, somebody asked me, could this guy be a number one? I was like, I don't think so. You know, not certainly not in his current form. That opinion has changed. This guy runs routes at a different caliber now. He's catching the ball away from his body. He's showing late hands. The route tree is more complete. The deep ball, obviously, speed is still there. And rough day at practice for JMO, you know, put a couple on the ground, but the full body of work this offseason, this training camp, has been nothing short of jaw-dropping.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. Like, he's not the same guy that we saw last year, especially not 2 years ago. That was very much an immature JMO that was still kind of learning how to learn this league. But for my answer, I'll go with Ahmad Hassanein, sixth-round pick. Yeah. He's been really impressive to me. And, you know, when he was coming out of Boise State, you knew that, you know, he didn't have the measurables, the pure athleticism. That's kind of why he ended up in the sixth round. But what he did have was an insane motor and an ability to keep going and never stop. And we've seen that in practice. I think what's impressed me most about him is just how quickly he's learning in real time. He's picking up moves that I didn't know he could do. It's kind of like you're looking around just like, How did you do that? Where did you learn that? And then you talked to him. He's like, oh, I picked Hutch, or I've been watching him, or picking the brain of Panay Sewell and learning like how my counters can work against him. So this kid is like a quick study. He loves the game. He's so appreciative just to be. Yeah. We talk to him. He's like, yeah, we have like snacks in the weight room. It's so cool.
Lobster like, mac and cheese.
Yeah, you know, he's just so excited. Like he's trying. I think he's going to try some shawarma here in Dearborn pretty soon. Yeah. So, yeah, he's just happy to be here. He's having the time of his life, but he's also learning quickly. And you know, he's playing a position that, you know, there are some question marks with the depth at the edge position right now. We don't know if Za'Darius will be back. As things currently stand, they've got Hutch and Marcus Davenport as starters, but. I think going in when he was drafted, I wasn't sure just how quickly he'd be able to kind of ascend up the depth chart. But we've seen him like worked in with the first team a little bit when guys have been out. He's been a mainstay with the second unit, had a great preseason game. So I don't want to put a ceiling on where he is right now. At first I was like, might take some time to crack the lineup, but he's growing rapidly. And I think that's something that a lot of us can say about him.
Yeah. I'll echo Colton only because I also had Hassanin's name written down, and yeah, I think his acclimation is already happening more quickly than any of us thought it would. And it was interesting that Brad Holmes was on 97.1 this morning with the morning show, and he was asked, as he is every time he's asked about his team, about the defensive end position opposite Hutch. And, of course, highlighted Davenport right away and then pivoted pretty quickly to Hassanin and expressed a lot of the same sentiments that Colton just did. And when I watch Hassanin, especially in that Hall of Fame game, I see a guy who just seems like a pain in the ass to have to block down after down after down. Because even if you think you've won the rep initially, he's not going to stop going after you. And I think that wears on an offensive lineman over the course of two quarters, three quarters, four quarters. And yes, he is also studying Hutchinson's tape to the point that he might be wearing number 97 on Friday night. If he had his way, he might be seeking his autograph. But the motor obviously jumps out. The power jumps out. You can even see some of the CrossFit tendencies maybe leaking into his game here. And then I'll just go more generally about the defense. I've been really impressed at how cohesive and disruptive that unit has looked so far. And I know that tends to be the case for most defenses around the NFL at this time in camp, typically have the upper hand on offenses. But even with, you know, with Onsarike out for the year and McNeil still working his way back, I see a unit that looks like it could be much more than a liability, much more than average, maybe even a difference-making group this year. And I was talking with Alex Anzalone today about that. And I should say the first thing he said when I asked about the defense having the upper hand so far was, well, look, Taylor Decker's out. And you know, that was his way of saying, we've obviously been picking on some second string and third string left tackles, and things will look different when Decker gets back in there, probably as soon as next week. But the other thing that he said that I took note of was that we're pressuring more. And look, this is a team that blitzed with the second highest frequency last year of any team in the NFL. And so when I asked him, is Shett more aggressive? He said, not more aggressive, but just so far, he's more creative. Like, he's giving them a little more freedom to change the pressure as opposed to just running the pressure set in stone that AG may have called. And I think that can be hard to pick up on just watching practice. I think that might come to light the more we see the first team defense playing games, the more we all get a chance to look back at film. But that caught my eye, that I think Kelvin Shepherd is putting even more on the players' plates and allowing them to think in real time as a way of getting home to the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way he coaches, right? He teaches conceptually. So what is the purpose of the play? And if you give that freedom, as long as the 11 on the field know the purpose, you know, you should be able to have some of that ad-libbing ability. The blitz game's been great. But I do want to dip back to Hassanin really quick because, you know, I see it too. You know, Campbell actually used a term with Tyleek Williams to talk about Tyleek Williams, say the shock and shed. And I think it's a perfect fit for Hassanin as well. The run defense feels, I don't know if advanced, but NFL ready, I think is probably the way I would describe it. He is able to really jar the offensive tackle and shed and contribute in the run game immediately. And you get the sense he appreciates the value of stopping the run first. And, you know, he used the phrase earning the right to rush the passer. And, you know, that's where he's still developing. You know, we see little flashes of it. You know, I think it's going to be a lot slower coming along, but, you know, I think it is a guy that maybe can contribute a little bit earlier than we anticipate. And I want to transition back with that same, you know, mindset to Tesla. You know, this is a guy that I think we all looked at as developmental to a degree. And, you know, we're just reading into what the coaches and the front office say when they add the guy that's, you know, from Hillsdale, had a limited role in terms of, you know, playing mostly in the slot for Arkansas, and they're moving him to the outside. He's got to learn better releases. He's got to learn better routes. And I use the phrase flatten the curve. Like the learning curve we thought is just much flatter. You know, most of his work is still coming with the second team. What's it he told you guys today that when J-Mo gets super tired, he gets those reps with the first team. So it's only been a handful. But I think I'm speaking for the group here that Tesla is going to contribute a little bit more than we anticipated, I think, a month ago this season, his rookie season.
You know what's crazy is that Colton and I were standing side by side during a practice. I think it was last Sunday, so 4 days ago, watching receiver DBs one-on-ones. And I think we watched Tesla make a play and then maybe Tim Patrick not make a play. And I turned to Colton and I said, earnestly, who do you think has more receiving yards this year, Tim Patrick or Isaac Tesla? And he said, oh, man, that's going to be close. And I honestly feel like 4 days later, it might not be. Now, part of this depends on how serious Patrick's injury was today, and we still don't know exactly what went down. It sounds like it might have been a quad issue. But if you take the way both of them have played through 2.5-3 weeks of camp, Tesla is clearly the more impactful player right now. And we even see Patrick running a little bit with the twos. But I wanted to note on Tesla, like he and Colton, you and I also talked about this. He ran mostly out of the slot at Arkansas. And when you look at him, you don't imagine a slot receiver. He has the tools and the physicality and the ball skills to win outside. And he was saying today, you know, the biggest difference in running outside versus a slot is that in the slot, first of all, you have so much more room sideline to sideline, but in general, you also have so much more room off the line. You're really not getting pressed all that often in the slot. And he's learning pretty quickly, to me, it seems like, how to win while being pressed out wide. And the coaching staff has harped that to him really from the moment he arrived, and especially during camp, that he has the physicality and the strength to jam a DB before the DB jams him. And I'll go back to one more play he made. Maybe the first play he made that stood out during camp was that like slot fade touchdown that was the final play of practice maybe 2 weeks ago. And earlier in that practice, he lost basically that exact route against that exact same corner, who I believe was DiCaprio Boodle. Is that correct?
I think
he told me afterwards, like, I just tried to do too much on that first fade and never really gained separation. So on the second one, I just did a quick little dip, jab step, and go, and I got down the line. And that's growth in real time happening over the course of a practice, and it seems to have accelerated even more since. You know, he said today, even when it's a 50-50 ball, I consider it 70-30 or 60-40, call it what you want.
That's right.
I have the physicality, but also the hands in the air to come down with every ball that's thrown my way. He's already talking like a really confident player, despite his pretty minimal track record in college. And you saw some of that confidence, first of all, when he put his shoulder down and basically ran through a DB in the Hall of Fame game. And you heard it today, and I love this, when someone asked him, you know, what a confidence boost it was to play well in the Hall of Fame game. And he was like, yeah, I mean, I had two catches for 46 yards. Like, it's nothing that major. I expect to do that, was the subtext, against second and third string defenders. And I expect to do more of that moving on. So my long-winded way of saying, I think by the end of this season, he has bigger numbers than Tim Patrick. And I don't think that's a bad thing for this team.
Yeah, just one more thing on Tesla. I'll
add. It's kind of wild to think about, really. You know, I think when – yeah, yeah.
Oh, I was just gonna say, when I look at him, I feel like he's almost bored out there when I watch him on the field, because like he is getting all these reps with the second string guys, and I quite honestly, I think he's earned
it's the hair
more of those first string reps. I think he's good.
No, I finished your thought. Sorry.
I just think he's earned the right to kind of get more of those reps with the first team. He does look a little bit bored out there, and the physicality stuff and winning on the outside is kind of some stuff we didn't really see at Arkansas. You know, he had a limited route tree. He was running a lot of comebacks and crossers and hitch routes, mostly from the slot. And he's still working from the slot quite a bit. But when you do see him on the outside, you want to see him be physical with those corners. And he's done that against the second string corners. Now what I want to see is him go against Amik Robertson, go against DJ Reed, go against Terran Arnold. That's I think, the next test for him. Because I think, quite honestly, he's proven all he can against the second stringers. And I spent the whole day watching him today. He looks like he's ready for more opportunities. Like, there are a couple of times he almost, you know, I think Scotty was like, all right, Slaw, you're going in. And then something changed and he's like about to run in. Scotty's like, wait, hold up, go back. Yeah. And he looks so bored, so sad, like walking back to the sideline waiting for his opportunity. But I do think it's coming. I do think at the end of the season, when we look back, I think by the time, you know, you get to late November, December, he's going to end up being a pretty big piece of this offense, and that will springboard him forward going into 2026.
Would you agree, though, Colton, that you'd be willing to bet more on Tesla than Patrick at this point, even if you weren't 4 days ago? It seems like a lot has changed since then.
Yeah, you know, betting is not allowed at the Allen Park facility, so I will refrain from answering that. But no. I do think he'll work himself into that mix. And you know, Tim Patrick, you know, he's been quite pretty honest with us. He's not used to, you know, practicing this hard as the Lions do. I think that's something that a lot of people are learning when they come here. Yeah. These guys go hard every day. They never really rest. So I think he's kind of feeling some of that now. But once the season rolls around, he's going to get into a routine. I think he'll still be a pretty solid piece of this offense.
Isaac also has a pretty cold nickname that has obviously made the rounds on Twitter. And we should give him a little due to is it Lions one? It's one Pride guy on Twitter who suggested the name Coleslaw because he's white and dangerous when left out in the open. And
that boy,
look, man, I brought it to Isaac and he was like, "Yeah, you talking about the tweet?" I was like, "Yeah, you see it?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm down. Like, I'll roll with it." It beats Vanillatron. Who's ever talking about that? Out there? That's fair.
I'm out on both. Keep workshopping, boys.
Yeah, you can see a common theme with Brad Holmes' wide receivers, I've noticed. They have similar traits. It's confidence. They do. I mean, you talked about Ahmed Hassanein earning the right to pass rush. You have to earn the right to get the rock if you're a receiver. I mean, these physical run-blocking receivers is a common theme with Isaac. And I know I fell victim to this as well. It was not about the player, but it was the trade. It was like, who, what, where, sure. Arkansas? And then I think everyone's immediate reaction is to check numbers, and then you watch the tape. And it obviously is different from the numbers, but when you check the numbers, it's like the instant gratification. You're like, what? Yeah. And then you see him, and I think he's like the perfect surprise because even – and I could speak kind of from the fan side, like going and watching him, you're like, this guy much more – his game's much more matured than everyone initially thought. You know, he's making plays, winning one-on-ones. I know – he doesn't need a lot of separation. Clearly, you talked about that well, too. He's just he's a freak, and he has the advantage. I mean, he's 6'4". He's bigger than most DBs. So he's making plays. He's a hands catcher, which you see that on full display. Like, I agree 1,000%. Like, as much as I think Tim Patrick, with a new offensive coordinator, he has that reliability. He's been in the offense. Yeah. By the end of the year, I just believe you can do more with Isaac in your offense than Tim Patrick, and that's all due respect. I just think he raises the ceiling a little bit, because he's 6'4", and he runs a 4'4", which, love Tim Patrick, he ain't getting 4'4 at this age. He's just not. No. So it's Isaac brings a lot more to the table in that area as well.
It's not a mistake that when Tesla runs routes after practice, he's catching passes from Jared Goff, not Hendon Hooker or Kyle Allen. Like, they're already beginning to hone that rapport and that connection. I think both of them envision him playing a pretty significant role, at least at some point this season.
He's out for a minute, but Dominic Lovett, too. I mean, you talk about a guy that just kind of stunned me with how aggressive he blocked in that first preseason game. I mean, he really got after it. I know he saw a lot of targets, and it was a little chaotic at points. You know, some drops, some slips, some catches. It was all over the place. But, you know, it looks like Holmes might have mined a talent that will contribute this year and going forward there as well.
Yeah, I like Lovett a lot. I think he's an interesting player. You brought up his ability, his run blocking ability, but he's kind of that gadget guy. I don't know. I would like to ask you guys before we move on here. They have what probably they probably have what, six receivers that you have to think about keeping at this point, five, six receivers, which is, I guess, not, you guys would know more in this area, not like them usually keeping that many receivers, but it looks like, I mean, you got to keep all these guys, Dominic Lovett, Isaac, Tim, J-Mo, Amon-Ra, and Khalif.
Yeah.
It feels like I've got him at six. Six. Yeah, I agree with Justin there.
And the hard thing for me is like Jackson Meeks, undrafted free agent. Like this team rewards undrafted guys that work. Like Jackson Meeks pops out every single practice as a contested catch guy, as a special teams guy. He finds himself in the right spots. I don't know where you find room for that guy. Like I don't think you can justify a seventh unless, you know, Lovett's abdomen injury ends up being more serious than it is and doesn't sound like it will be. Like, I don't know. If Meeks can get through waivers, that's a really nice add on the practice squad as well.
Yeah, he's got some one-handed catchability. That alone is worth keeping around.
Yeah, no doubt. I've seen the guy make plays. And he was, yeah. I mean, he had the drop. Obviously, the ball ripped from him in the preseason game. But overall, he was making plays out there. I guess when it comes to the other side of it, concerns, which – this has been a common theme, and I got to watch how I phrase this because I don't think it's a full concern at this point, but I think something that just stands out. You talked about the defense. It's the offense. It's the kind of the slow tick, which last year kind of similar theme, right? The first couple of weeks, that was the Tampa Bay game early on where they just didn't sniff the end zone. And they
sniffed it. They just couldn't get in it. That was like the 1-for-6 red zone game. They were sniffing that thing all game long.
Yeah. They were sniffing it. They just couldn't enter the end zone, which, you know, that's a thing I guess I have to mention before people start assuming that the offense is all of a sudden bad, which is not the case. They have a ton of talent. But the offense seems like the defense has just been ahead of the offense. And I think more specifically when you're talking about the offense, my mind goes to the O-line because Decker just got back. Obviously, you lost Frank. You have Graham playing center now. Tate's at his natural position. But I think what I've noticed just from the couple practices I've been is you see the O-line. I saw one without Taylor Decker, and then I saw it today, a different perspective. But they weren't really hitting today, so it's hard to really judge it.
Right.
But the offensive line, it's going to take time. I think that's fair. I mean, you had Kevin Zeitler last year and Frank. Those guys are steady Eddie. Now you're going to a much younger O-line, and Christian Mahogany's looked really good. But I think the concern for me, and it's more of a question, an unanswered question heading into the season, is how does this O-line look week in and week out? And what does it look like, not just week one, week two, week three, but by the end of the season going into the postseason? Because I think that's what matters. It's not just the gelling process, but it's where they end up.
I think we're just going to have a way better perspective on this group after the joint practice of Miami. And I'm assuming at that point Decker's back practicing because there's a pretty sharp drop off. And this is not unique around the league, but from, you know, starting tackle to a backup. And that is certainly the case with Taylor to Dan Skipper, who's, you know, an adequate NFL backup. And then it's a gulf between Taylor Decker and Giovanni Manu. I mean, it's just staggering and the offense can't operate effectively. And Dan Campbell said something today, and I don't know why it didn't click in my brain sooner, but he said Aiden Hutchinson is back there so frequently that he wrecks practices. And there's often these times where we're standing on the sideline and charting plays. And we're like, why didn't they whistle that dead? Aiden was back there. It's like, you can't whistle every play dead. Like you need to see how the offense operates beyond Aiden wrecking, you know, a backup offensive tackle. You just let it go and chart it somewhere else. But I don't know about you guys, but I don't feel as unsure about the interior of the offensive line as I once did. And there's absolutely some chemistry to build with Glasgow and the pups, with Mahogany and Ratledge. But I think the offensive line is going to be better than maybe we think. And certainly I will have a better perception of that once Decker is back in the fold. But until he is, like I just am having a really hard time grasping how much that's the responsibility of the entire offense's struggles here in camp.
Yeah, I was surprised a little bit at how quickly they pivoted from Ratledge to Glasgow at center. And that spoke pretty clearly to me of their reservations about Ratledge's ability to pick up center as a rookie. Because I think, Jeff, you and I are in agreement that my perspective on the offensive line was that this coaching staff is so hyper-focused for the right reasons on how this team is playing in December and January that it was maybe worth living with Tate's growing pains at center early, knowing that his ceiling might be higher than Glasgow's, by December and January. And then you put him in there for three or four games where he had never played a game before in his life, other than a few practice reps at Georgia. And you realize that this is a monumental ask of a rookie in a really complex offense, which is something that, Graham has talked about. Like, they run every single kind of run scheme, from gap to outside zone to inside zone to trap to wham to pin and pull to tackle pull. That to put those assignments on the plate of a rookie while also asking him to diagnose the defense and sift through 11 players and make the right checks in concert with Jared Goff was just too much. It was too heavy. And Glasgow was better suited for that job as someone who has spent a lot of time in this offense already. But, you know, we're so used to seeing this team run the ball through like the A gap and the B gap and behind their interior offensive linemen with relative ease, that it has been pretty jarring to watch them struggle to move the ball in the trenches on the ground for most of camp. Yeah, Jameer has broken a couple outside, Demo's broken a couple around the edges, but to me anyways, watching this team try and move the ball up the middle has been a struggle. And that's where this offense is built, and I think that's where the coaching staff probably wants to see the most growth between now and week one, because the offense won't thrive the way it has without the ability to run the ball, especially behind the interior of the offensive line. Yeah.
What I love working with Will and Colton is they challenge the way I think and make me think differently when we have these conversations on the sideline. And you know, the point Will made about this coaching staff being so hyper focused on December and January made me reconsider how I always thought Glasgow was going to be the starting center. And, you know, I go back to Dominic Raiola, Travis Swanson, Graham Glasgow, Frank Ragnall, all those guys started at guard. I didn't see any way they would start a rookie at center. This is the way I kind of always thought it would go. But to even put that thought in my head, it was a really smart observation. And I have to imagine that, you know, I still think they view Ratliff as their 2026 center.
Yeah.
It's just, let's be a little patient. And, you know, you hinted at it. I've heard some things that the Goff had more to do with this kind of change than maybe anything, right? You want your quarterback to be right. If your quarterback's not right, the offense isn't right. And I think Goff preferred the comfort and security. I know Goff preferred the comfort and security of having a veteran he knew and understood versus a guy that's still kind of figuring out on the fly. He doesn't want to wait till December and January as much as the coaching staff does.
Yeah, nor should he. And I had two schools of thought going into that battle this summer. And it's like, if you want someone at more athletically similar to Frank Ragnow, the guy you just lost, it's Tate Ratliff, right? He has the high RAS, and you know, he's got the length and size and like everything you want out of a long-term center prospect. It's just, he didn't have the experience. All he was limited to was some backup reps in practice, right? Like, he was essentially going to be the next man up. If there was an injury for a game, that never really happened. He didn't need to go into a game. So when you hear stuff like that and you're like, oh, he's a quick study, but we don't really know. And it's like, okay, it seems like they would like for him to take over this position next year, but, and at least see what he can do early on in camp. And that's what we saw him getting a bunch of reps early on. But at some point that shift happened and they're just like, okay, the other school of thought here is, let's make our quarterback as comfortable as possible. Yep. Let's put him with a guy that he knows, a guy that he's played with before. And Graham said himself, I think ideally he'd want to play right guard, but if you're going to ask him to play center versus play right guard and help the young guys around him anyway, just put him at center. I think that's what he said to me and Justin and a few others. If you're going to make me make the calls at the line anyway, just put me at center.
If I'm going to play center and guard, I'll just play center.
Exactly. And like, it's things like that where it sounds so simple, but then you hear it from player himself and you're just like, okay, yeah, there it is. And they haven't really gone back since that conversation. So I agree with both of you. It's like, it's hard to really evaluate this unit right now because they've had so many rotating guys in at left tackle. Dan Skipper, when he was playing, was getting work by Aiden Hutchinson. That happens a lot. Aiden Hutchinson's a great player. Giovanni Manu is going through some of that himself, and he's a lot, you know, not as far along as even Dan Skipper, who's been in this league for a while. So he's still learning on the fly. And he actually had a tough day at practice today. And Justin and I and a few others kind of saw Taylor out there giving him some tips. And I talked to Taylor after practice, and he goes, you know, I had those moments when I was a rookie and I struggled on the field. And when I was going through it, there are so many guys that would come up to me during practice and say, hey, maybe you should do this instead, or hey, look out for this. And it irritated him to have those conversations during practice. So he waited until after practice, sought out Gio, and was like, hey man, how you feeling? I just want to see where you're at after a tough day of practice. And like, ideally Gio was taking over for Taylor down the road. You know, that's sort of the blueprint for them, but it's good to see a guy like Taylor Decker, you know, kind of mentoring these young guys. And, you know, he's going to be back here soon. He said that he expects to be back out there next week, but you know, until then you can't really get a full evaluation of this offensive line, of this unit. Cause Hudge is out there wrecking things. Like that's, it's a good thing that he's looking like his old self and he's wrecking every other play. Yeah. But I agree with Campbell. It's like, come on, man, can you give us like a couple of reps here to see what we have? So it's a tough balance, but you like both sides of it, I think.
I almost put Hutch as a surprise. I mean, I'm sitting here going, yeah. What? Does this guy have a cyborg leg? I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
He looks elite.
I'll say in favor of the offensive line, you know, while they lost a pillar and maybe even two in Ragnow and Zeitler, I think by the end of this year, they will have gained one in Christian Mahogany. And
no doubt.
Not just saying that because he's a fellow Boston College Eagle, although BC does have a bit of a reputation for churning out some interior offensive linemen. I'm saying that mostly because he plays with the kind of ferocity and nastiness that Hank Fraley requires, that Dan Campbell requires, that this offense at large demands. And he's the kind of guy who will win a block and then go look for someone else to block. Like he's talking today about how much he loves run blocking and how, you know, his dad, when he was growing up, was a Cowboys fan. And so Larry Allen, the Hall of Fame guard, was one of his favorite players and one of the players that Christian watched the most growing up. And he said he's always just tried to play with the same nastiness as a guy like Larry Allen. And I said, you know, it's hard when you're looking as a young offensive lineman for players to emulate. You can't just like turn on an all 22. You know, you can't find offensive line highlights. So he would go to Madden and just find the highest rated offensive lineman and then try and play like they played. But most of all, try and approach the game the way they approached it. And, you know, we do see him, especially as a run blocker, beginning to pave some lanes for Gibbs and Demo. And I think we look up at the end of the year and you feel really good about where they stand at left guard with Mahogany.
It's weird seeing number 73 out there. You think of
why he wears
Jonah Jackson,
it.
Right?
Yeah, he wears 73 for Larry Allen. Yeah.
Yeah. I think of Jonah Jackson, how he held that spot down for so long, but honestly, like it feels like Mahogany's ceiling is higher, and Jonah was a very good player here, but the run blocking is a different level. And I've said this a few times, a few different people, like I feel like top five camp right now has been Mahogany. And we saw the two starts last year were great, but you run it back and you're like, all right, sample size, calm down, sample size. And, mm-hmm. and Brad Holmes was saying kind of the same thing. He wasn't using the word, but he was like, hey, he's only got limited reps. We don't know. And I'm pretty sure he said it again on 97.1 today, like we weren't sure, but there's no question he looks like a stable piece. And, you know, again, just another Holmes find. I mean, that's why this franchise is where it's at, is because Brad has continued to find pieces and the coaching staff is able to maximize it. The symbiotic nature of those two elements right now are why this organization is where it's at.
Yeah, can I add one more note on Mahogany that I think the fans will really appreciate?
BC, it's out of control. Tone
it down, lads, over there.
Boston College podcast, our live stream. Most players in the NFL go home in the offseason and train wherever they're from. Very few stick around here. Penei Sewell is one who does, partly because he's from American Samoa, but also because
he
has begun to root himself and his family in Detroit. One of the others that stayed behind in the offseason this year was Mahogany. And he trained every single day at the facility with Sewell and said, you know, that was a challenge. It's easy to forget that they're the same age. In fact, they're separated by like 2 days in birth. But Sewell has been in the NFL for 3 more years, essentially. And you watch Mahogany play and you see elements of Sewell in the aggressiveness and the finish. And I just think that if Sewell, even in the smallest ways, rubbed off on Mahogany this offseason, both in the weight room and on the field, and it looks like he has, that's obviously a really good thing.
I'm looking up traits of their Zodiac sign right now to see if aggressiveness falls in.
Hey, well, Justin, throw me in there. I'm 11 days from Panay Sewell. Obviously, the physical stature.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah. 24,
is there a difference there in physical stature? Is there?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sitting down.
What's your ass?
Hey, Mahogany, he's actually a player I'm super excited for. I'm part of my Mahogany. I still don't know. Thank goodness he came out of the womb with one leg longer than the other. All right, I don't know how that works, but if he's available in the seventh round, I'm cool, or the sixth round, I'm cool with it.
None of us have asked us about this legend that has grown, right? Like, you know, I don't notice a man that's like standing lopsided. Yeah. Is this a Boston College thing?
No, but I'll note that I believe Tarek Skubal also has different length legs, so you know he's in good company already.
What is happening?
That's a great point. That's an excellent point. I want to bring up another concern. This is kind of like the icebreaker episode. I want to know if it's as big of a concern as fans think it is, and this is a good way to ask you guys: is QB2? Because I think there's a section of people that believe. And I agree with it. If Jared Goff goes down, you're screwed anyway. You can bring up Nick Foles. That's an off. To me, that's the exception. It can happen, of course, but beating the greatest quarterback to ever exist, usually an exception. Usually, if your quarterback's out for the season, you are screwed. But there are times where during a season, we see this often where quarterbacks, you know, will get a concussion, they'll be ruled out, or they'll miss a game, two games, three games, and you are a contending team that has to win your division, or you're playing for seeding. And that's where the backup quarterback, you at least want someone that can give you a chance to play. And then there's a split crowd on it. I think right now with what they have, there's a player like Hendon Hooker who they seem to be excited about in terms of his development. Obviously, he has the pedigree from college. I was a big fan of his coming out. Brad Holmes drafted him, so there's a reason to be somewhat excited. But, you know, his rookie year, it's tough because he wasn't really participating, so you don't really look at it as a true rookie year. Last year was really his true rookie year. And then this year, after a good preseason last year, and then this year, you know, he didn't really get a fair shake in the preseason game. He's had, you guys would know more about his camp performance, but kind of a great camp performance. Everything from what I've heard, he's been more positive than negative. And then he didn't really get a fair shake in that first preseason game. And then Kyle Allen obviously has the two interceptions, which I just got to say, all due respect. Kyle Allen, I think he's a solid guy, solid QB3. But there's one fact about Kyle Allen. He has as many turnovers as touchdowns in his career. That is a fact. So we kind of know what Kyle Allen is, with all due respect. Yeah. What do you guys make of that QB2 spot, and kind of, you know, whether it's a bigger deal than people think or less of a deal?
If Jameson Williams is the most improved player on the roster, on the practice field, Hendon Hooker might be number two for me.
That's awesome.
And I get it. That preseason performance was junk. I know he rated a 0 out of 10. It's a fair grade. It's a harsh grade, but fair grade. Really rough preseason showing. And that's what many fans saw, and why, you know, Twitter was abuzz with, you know, bring back Teddy Bridgewater. I get it. I'm telling you, and I know Will and Colt will echo this. This guy has taken it to another level in his third season. You know, last year was marred by a couple different things. His first full off season, one, the rebuild of the mechanics. You know, when anytime you overhaul something, it's going to be kind of clunky to you get it right. On top of that, he breaks or dislocates his thumb on his throwing hand. The accuracy was all over the place. In this camp, the accuracy has improved by an exponential measure. The zip on the ball is fantastic. And really, to me, the biggest upgrade with Hendon and the biggest concern previously was his processing. You know, and you know, he's coming from a system people were concerned about at the half-field processing in Tennessee. Totally understandable. We would laugh because he'd be in one-on-one drills or 7-on-7 and he would scramble. Like, you don't scramble when there's no rush, but that's just what Hendon would do because it's where his mind was. Like, if it's not there right away, I got to run. And it's not to say he doesn't do it ever, and he did it once in the Hall of Fame game, but the rate and the frequency that it happens has plummeted. He's making that 1-2-3 read. He's finding the checkdowns far more often. He's identifying the blitzers far more often. And, you know, it hasn't been perfect, but, I mean, so much better of a camp. And And really, I mean, extend to Kyle Allen. I think Kyle Allen has been a great level of competition for him. I said the other day, like, in terms of 1-2-3 quarterbacks, it's the best I've seen in my 14 years covering the beat. And maybe Sean Hill, Kellen Moore, second year is kind of in that conversation. But when you have quarterbacks performing at that level across the board, it makes the evaluation of the entire roster better. And so I think the Lions, despite what we saw in the Hall of Fame game, their quarterback situation backup, as good as it can be, right, is in such a good place to, one, evaluate the roster, and two, give them a chance to survive in a pinch if Goff goes down.
I will say I think there's a massive disconnect between, you know, what we're reporting and what the fan base sees, because they're limited. Unless you're there for training camp, you know, you come out to Allen Park, you can see it on a day. We're there, you know, every day, all 11 days so far, I believe. And it's like, what we're seeing is completely different from what we saw in that preseason game. It's almost to a point where you're like, you're not rooting for guys because we're journalists, but like, you're rooting for your own self-interest and rooting for guys to make you look smart, right?
Rooting, it's
like,
clarity.
I'm writing that you guys are looking good. Kyle is ripping the ball. Hendon's processing so much better. We're writing these things, and they go out there against the Chargers in that Hall of Fame game, and it looks like the exact opposite. I get why the fan base is like, what the hell? You told us these guys are good. So like, that's kind of the tough part when you're out there reporting, but like, we just have to trust what we see, and we're seeing what the coaches see. And like, the preseason game is a small fraction of like the evaluation process. Most of it's going to come in those daily practices, in all the charts that they're keeping track of, each throw, each read, each decision. So that's where the coaching staff is kind of tracking during this time. They're looking for that progress. And I can tell you, they've seen that from Hendon. The game is slowing down. That's something he said a couple times this offseason. I think last year was a little bit hard for him because he did have, you know, the finger injury and working on the footwork, as Justin mentioned. I almost give him a pass for that, but there was some pressure put on him. You know, Brad told us that at the owners' meetings, like, hey, Kyle's here for competition. Like, he's trying to win this job just like Hendon is. So, like, both of those guys have to perform. They're not just going to hand the job to Hendon because he was a former third-round pick. That's not how it works around here. So I think you need to see some of that growth. We've seen it, you know, in training camp, in these practices, behind the scenes, and he does look a lot better than he did a year ago. But at the same time, when you see him out there in these games, I think something that matters, at least to the fan base, to say like, hey, can we see some progress here? I know you guys are seeing it, but like, I'd love to see some myself. Let's get a little bit of action here. I understand that side of it as well. But, you know, Hendon's going to get the opportunity against the Falcons. I know the Lions tend to alternate these quarterbacks. So Kyle got the start against the Chargers. Hendon will get the start against the Falcons. I would like to see him get an extended run, maybe even into the second half. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but I think at this point, you know what Kyle is. Like, he's a veteran. He's been in this league for a while. They've never really given Hendon that opportunity to kind of get off the leash there. And that's been, you know, 2 years into this. I won't count his first year because he was injured, but 2 years now of that happening. And it's like, at some point, you need to get an evaluation of this guy, hopefully before he turns 30, which is coming up here. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's October, right? October birthday.
He's actually the same age as Sewell and Lager. I'll echo what Colton said, and Jeff, what you were suggesting, which is that like, your evaluation of Kyle Allen isn't going to change based on his preseason performance, but your outlook on Hooker very well might. And I'm not telling Dan or anyone how to do their job, but I would give him more than two quarters of action on Friday night. I'd play him three. Heck, I'd play him four and see what it looks like, and more importantly, see what he looks like after it. Like, what kind of growth does that allow him to make? But the other reason that I think the conversation about QB2 is overblown is Jared Goff hasn't missed a game in three seasons. Like, hopefully, as Brad Holmes said this morning, we never see Hendon play. He's like, I don't want to see him play. I drafted him. I don't want to see him play. And given Jared's durability, which I do think is an attribute, I do think that's a skill. It's not just good fortune. I don't think fans should be fretting so much about what the QB2 situation really looks like. Jared has a way of absorbing contact and absorbing blows. It just kind of makes him like a rubber band man. He's kind of impervious to taking the full brunt of a hit. And you know, unless something freakish happens with, you know, like a rolled ankle, I just don't foresee the Lions needing to turn to Hooker. And so it might be that by the end of this season, it's once again a moot point, assuming he can get through a playoff game without having to call Teddy Bridgewater.
I think, right, he's shifting in dad bod era now, right? That's how it works when you have that first kid. So it's only going to get stronger, right? But, you know, while we're talking there, I looked really quickly back to my final roster projection last year, and I had them keeping three quarterbacks. You know, Hendon was never going anywhere, but I still felt like the full body of work, they weren't going to trust Hendon going to the season quite yet. And I was wrong. You know, I can admit that now. Hendon did surge across the finish line with that last game. I haven't felt that way this camp, and I think you could justify keeping all three, but I think Hendon at this point, I trust him fully as a backup quarterback. And you can talk about Goff going out and the whole thing falling apart, and that's true. Same thing I said about offensive tackles. Like, it's a disaster for most backup quarterbacks around the league. There are very few guys. There are very few Ryan Fitzpatricks or Nick Foles or Gardner Minshews around the world, and you got to pay those guys $7, $8, $10 million. But I feel very good about Hendon stepping in and kind of filling the void in, you know, whether it's a series or a half or even, you know, I think you could game plan around him and start and survive with Hendon Hooker more so than certainly a year ago.
Justin's lying. His roster projection last year had.
I looked at it. No,
you're correct, but it was Jared, Hendon, Jake Fromm.
You almost forget about the Jake Fromm experience, to be honest.
Yeah. An era, almost, unto itself.
It was a great
era. What was your favorite part of the Jake Fromm era? Yeah.
I declined further comment.
Well, we got about 13 minutes here left of the show. I guess this is...
Oh, perfect. We have limits?
I do. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I guess as a technical term, 13 minutes. But what are we expecting from Friday's preseason? We talked about the quarterback battle, obviously that's going to be the big thing, Hendon Hooker, but you could go into it more or anything besides that, but what you're looking for against the Falcons.
I really want to see what Keith Cooper does with another opportunity to make plays. This is becoming the unheralded story that he's becoming the darling of training camp, at least among the undrafted free agents. You know, there really isn't a path for many, if any, to make this highly competitive and highly talented roster, but Keith Cooper happens to play a position where the Lions do have some holes to fill and do need some depth behind their guys up front. And look, it's no mistake that he's gotten some pretty steady run now with the first team and second team defense. And when you ask offensive linemen in particular about Cooper, they all point to his length and how he's longer than your typical nose, a little more powerful maybe than your typical three. He has this versatility to play at essentially every spot on the defensive line, and we know how much this coaching staff values that. And I think it was Mahogany today who was just talking about some of the challenges that Cooper can present just with his length and how that stands out at the three tech. And I'm intrigued to see if he can continue his momentum on Friday night.
I'm so guilty at looking at the RAS, you know, friend of the program, Kent, right? Like he does such great work and he's brought such an interesting dynamic to researching prospects. And Cooper's RAS is not good. It's not particularly good for a defensive tackle, but there's an undeniable quality to his quickness off the ball and his ability to kind of disrupt the backfield. And feels like he's showing up in our notes every single day. I don't know how many UDFAs have made the roster. It's what, like a 15-year streak or whatever. And we were having the same questions last year. How many guys, you know, is one going to make it? And of course, three to make it. So shut us up real quick. So, but it does feel like, you know, I mentioned Meeks earlier, not really having a clear path. Like, it does feel like Cooper is the guy if that streak is going to continue. There are a couple, you're digging way deep. If we're taking backup quarterback off the table, and that's certainly the thing to watch in this game. Like, you know, I want to see how the tight end three competition continues to shake out. You know, the Zylstra, Kenny Yeboah, and I guess if you want to throw Zach Horton in that mix, you know, what are they looking for there? And then, you know, now that Dan Jackson is out, you know, that safety three spot is wide open. And Strickland got the start in the first preseason game. I think that's kind of a hint on the idea that he's ahead in that. But how do you not like Ian Kennelly, right? Like, super athletic. He's the new Jerome Copeland for me. He's the new Osprey. delivered a straight up choke slam for his, I think, first tackle in that game. I you know, Undertaker would be proud. Just a super athletic, super physical, clearly very raw talent coming out of Grand Valley. But like, I kind of want to see that competition, and I don't want to dismiss Maurice Norris, like an absolute, you know, missile in practice, looking to hit anything that moves. So, you know, it's probably boring to the average fan, but that's what I'm looking at, is where are they going to fill those roster spots 50 through 53? Who's the guy that's going to stand out and merit continued development, maybe carve out a role on special teams?
Yeah, thank you guys for leaving me with crumbs for this answer.
crumbs.
I had to shoot my Keith Cooper bullet before anyone else did.
No, that was great.
I know, it was the first name I had too. Well, damn it.
I'll go with Taylor Decker. You know, Dan Campbell said he's going to get some snaps. If not him, though, you know, there are a couple guys that we don't know if they're going to play, right? Like Tyleek and Tate Ratledge. Dan said they might get a couple snaps here.
For us, right?
I would love to see it. You know, I know those guys are going to be really valuable to this team, and I understand the risk of playing them in the preseason, but hey, they could use some extra work and some game reps. I don't think that would be the worst thing for them, even if it's for, you know, a series or two. I don't think that'd be the worst thing. Another guy, Sione Vaki. We haven't seen a ton of him.
Oh, yeah, good call.
Kind of in and out of practice. I know he wasn't out there today.
God, will we see him?
Yeah. Well, he told Ben Raven at M Live the other day that, you know, yeah, he's playing that game. He's excited. And then he doesn't show up for practice today. We don't see him. So it's like kind of some unknowns there. If he does play, I'm super excited to see him, because I think he's looked great in every opportunity he's gotten on the field. Showed some explosiveness and burst, running between the tackles, which I think was always a thing for him. You know, he just didn't play running back a lot in college. I think he played receiver in high school, so he looks like more of a natural receiver out of the backfield when you watch that. And even in practice, you see him and Gibbs sometimes split some rest with the receivers sometimes. But I would love to see him get an extended run at running back. I know Craig usually plays some of these games, but if they can find some reps for Sione, he's feeling good enough to go. Would love to see him as well. But, you know, I agree. Keith Cooper's looked awesome. Every time I look at him, he's flashing. He's, you know, beating someone with the bull rush and one-on-ones. Like, I'm really excited about him. And I think if there is a UDFA that's going to make this roster, it's probably going to be him. It's just a matter of, can you make the numbers work? They got some injuries they got to kind of figure out here before things get going. But, yeah, I mean, I look at this roster. I love their 2025 draft class. I think a lot of these guys are going to contribute right away. Obviously, the two guys in the trenches. We talked about Tesla, probably working his way in by the end of the year. Yep. Miles Frazier, whenever he gets healthy, I think he's a long-term piece at guard, kind of like Christian Mahogany coming out in the same mold. And then, you know, even Dominic Lovett, you know, when he gets healthy, we'll see if he has enough time to come back and keep impressing. But he's looked really sharp to me. So I think the rookie class and even the UDFAs they brought in have really helped this group so far.
I do not want to see Craig Reynolds this game. And not because like, he's looked really good in camp, and he looked really good in the preseason. I don't need to see any more Craig Reynolds. He's established. It's great. Good job. Take a seat. Enjoy being on the 53-man roster. Like, I really do hope we get to see Vaki, because, you know, he's interesting. And it's such a cliche in an industry, this whole first-year to second-year jump. But, like, that is true in any profession. Think about your first year as a reporter versus your second year reporter. There is no jump like that. I mean, just
think about how good this show is going to be in season two, baby.
Why wait for season two? How about episode two?
Episode two, come on, gains.
But it's crazy how much you take that time in that first year to kind of figure things out and make sure you're just doing the little things right and paying attention, and like the confidence you have in year two. There's never a jump that compares to that. So I'm absolutely excited. And you know, I know we got a BC hour in here. I hate that we're not going to get to see Ennis. I hate it. Like, and again, we're not fans, but like you experience an empathy and a connection with these guys. And like, you feel that kid's pain, you know, you knew he was fighting through something, And I really wanted to see, after the OTAs that he had, the the momentum that he had, the excitement that he had at himself, the confidence he had himself. I wanted to see what that looked like in the preseason, because it really looked like he was lined up to be CB3. And, you know, who knows when we'll see him again. I don't know right now if it'll even be in 2025. And that's just, it's a little sad.
Yeah. Hey, two more names to add to this conversation.
That do it.
Has admittedly extended longer than I definitely
We got thought. 4 minutes and 41 seconds.
There are two recent-ish draft picks who, depending on your perspective, might be on the wrong side of the roster bubble right now, both of whom will likely play on Friday night, one of whom might depend on an injury that may or may not have happened. But Broderick Martin, who was absent today, correct?
2 days in a row. I guess he's not playing, but I mean.
So let's assume he doesn't play.
Tells you where he's at, where we didn't ask about him, Will.
Yeah, the point remains. He needs to now win his roster spot back. I think he if camp ended tomorrow, he wouldn't make this team. And Colby Sorsdahl is also on the bubble and probably the wrong side of it, given some of the offensive line depth they've begun to accumulate, and he will be out there on Friday. And not that these preseason games are the be-all, end-alls, but he needs to start stacking some better performances and better showings to put himself on better ground as we approach cut day. And, dude, look, we know how loath Brad Holmes is to cut his own guys, especially his drafted guys, as are most GMs, but it feels especially true with Brad. And that tells you how much those guys have probably underachieved by his expectations. And as much as Broderick especially was viewed as a project, he really just hasn't developed the way that anyone would have liked or the way that they imagined. So those two guys are squarely, to me right now, on the chopping block of the 53-man.
Colby might play all five positions in this game, guys. I'm not going to lie. That guy is everywhere now. And he had a great preseason debut, really. And I get it. You're going against other guys that are going to be off rosters here in whatever, 2 or 3 weeks, but you nailed it, right? Like the depth of the interior, if you want to go way back to our first segment, like it's been a surprise, you know. Yeah. I think Coyote has been excellent. You know, I think he is the front runner as the first guard off the bench. I think Moody has been very good, and he's kind of on that fringe and maybe just slightly outside looking in. So I don't know where you find room for Colby, but, you know, he's certainly stayed in an early case in that Hall of Fame game with a really, really great game of guard. He stepped back in at tackle when they're down to, I don't know, like their seventh and eighth tackle right now. And it took two snaps, I think, in OTAs. So let's get him in. Let's Shane Halter this thing. Let's do all five positions in one game. Let's do it in one series.
Yeah, I like it.
Rotate every play.
Hey, Justin, you brought up Coyote because you did. You have to regale our audience
do it.
With the compliment. Well, you were there for it. I didn't hear it, but do you it. Have to regale our listeners with the compliment that he paid Colton today. Or was this a one-on-one compliment?
There are a few witnesses. There are a few witnesses that I can attest. I was just minding my own business, you know, waiting for some guys to walk off the field. And Coyote's like walking past me, stops, then makes a beeline right over to me and a few other people. And he like looks me up and down, like sizes me up. And he goes, "You been lifting, man?"
Let's go. Like,
yeah.
I've trimmed a little weight this offseason. I'm feeling good. You know, I'm glad he noticed. You know, it's about time is what I tweeted.
He was like, I also stayed home and trained with Panay and Mahogany all offseason. Right. I was in the facility too, hockey.
And then right after that, he said, "Put me on your roster projection." I said, "Okay." No,
this is where Colton and I get to brag. And I'm gonna point to Colton right here, because Colton was an inspiration for me. We get to be fat pieces. What can we say on the show? You know what I'm saying. Like we get out of control with our health on this. It's a long trips, hours, man, on this job, right? Like all the food, right? Mm-hmm. Colton started grinding, started to lose some weight, and I stepped on the scale after my birthday. And I was like, this is you're gross. what have you dropped, Colton? Tell the people you dropped.
I think we're at 45 pounds right now.
Since March.
Came back from the combine. And I was like, I don't feel good. Let's change this. So yeah,
45. I'm trying to catch this, guys. I'm at 36 since May.
That's right.
And I got Derek. I got Derek Barnes checking me out at the
beginning. That's right. That's like day two or something.
The players are noticing we're on their roster projections, as Colton said. So, what's that office episode where they all step on the scale? This podcast is down. Yeah. We're down a good
Lions
80 pounds right now.
Is down.
Let's go.
Wait, Lions Collective is down.
Our closing segment every week is going to be a weigh-in.
Will's going to be drinking Bud Lights.
Yeah. Me and Will need to put on pounds. That's what we need to do, Will. We need to get. We need to be going up a little bit.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. No, but that's. I mean, good for you guys, man. Good for you guys. And I think this. You know what? We're an hour and 1 minute. So
we did it. We did it.
We crushed this.
Time to land the plane.
About time we land the plane. Appreciate all of you in the chat as well, supporting the first episode. Again, this will be weekly.
We got a chat?
Wednesday. Yeah. You know what?
Oh, my God. I just found it.
Look at this. Oh,
man.
Easy.
I just found it too. Damn.
They want to see more chest hair. I mean, that's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
This is pretty successful. We'll be back next Wednesday, 6 p.m., to recap this preseason game and, of course, preview future games as well. Yeah. Appreciate you all for joining me. You guys know, I mean, you should already know the faces that are already here. Founder of the Detroit Football Network, Justin Rogers, Will Birchfield, Colton Pouncey, both cover the Detroit Lions. Colton for The Athletic. Will Birchfield working with 97.1 The Ticket. We'll catch you guys next Wednesday. And, of course, check out Crunch Time Sports. That's real fun.
Yeah.